interviewing Albert Raisman, and this is Marie Lurie on the 14th of February, Valentine's Day. Okay. Just to backtrack a little, Mr. Raisman, your birth date, please.
December 8th, 1918.
Mm-hmm. And could you tell us a little bit about your family, your immediate family?
Well,
you have a son, you mentioned.
I have two sons.
Could you tell us their names and when they were born?
Dr. Richard and Dr. David. Richard is a medical doctor, gastroenterologist in Pittsburgh. And David is a PhD in art history. Currently, he is chairman of the art history department at Drexel University.
Are they both married?
Hometown.
Oh. Are they both married?
Both married. Each have two children.
Mm-hmm.
The older one, Richard, has a daughter, Emma Jane, who is 19 years old and second year at Smith.
Mm-hmm.
His son, Noah, who's in the eighth grade at St. Edmunds.
Do you see a lot of them?
Yes, we see him. He's very busy. My daughter-in-law, he's married to Dorothy Lowenthal of Monroeville. She's an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Richard, and David is married to Lucy, L-U-C-Y, and she's a social worker with a master's degree. And they have two children, Joshua and Rebecca.
Did you feel when you were raising them, you created a similar atmosphere in your home to your own home, or did you change with the times?
Well, we thought we had a good relationship with our boys. We certainly made sure that they understood the importance of education and sociability, and more important, an obligation to the community. Couldn't do it with time, do it with money. And that's what's happening with the boys. Richard doesn't have the time, but he's very generous. David is involved with his temple, sings with them each Friday, and makes sure his children are involved. But Richard and his wife are very, very busy, and they just don't have the time. But any time I come to them for the Federation gift or the Exodus gift or the temple, when we get our restoration, I told them how much time I want. I said, well, that's what we need. That's what we need.
That's wonderful. So to get back to the post-war years, tell us a little bit about your life then.
Well, immediately after the war, I began to... I became a teacher at Business Training College under the old Finkelhor family.
Oh.
And they were very busy because with the GI Bill, anybody who wanted to go to school could go to school. And therefore, I got a job immediately teaching accounting, and evidently I was reasonably good at it because Duquesne University called me and asked me if I would take a part-time position with them. By 1949, I went on full time at the university. And I stayed with them for 31 years. They're very good relations with that school, with the presidents, and with my deans. In fact, I recall very vividly that each of the deans would come to me at the beginning of the semester and want to know when the Jewish holidays were, so that they would know. advise professors not to schedule examinations on Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah or something like that.
That's very interesting.
And I became very fast friends with the last dean, James Hayes, powerful man. He went on to become president of the American Management Association in New York City. And he insisted that I do his taxes, even in New York. I still do them. Unfortunately, he died last year, but I still do the work for his estate and for his wife. We're very fast friends.
Were you able to have a private practice at the same time?
All the deans said, as long as you take care of your work at the school, teaching, advising, testing, meetings, we would be happy if you would do outside work, because that gives you an opportunity to talk about personal experiences in the field and not just talk about the book, and we do this with accounts receivable and so forth. You would have a hands-on situation in cost and taxes and auditing and that's the way it was.
That's wonderful. And then you followed up with that when you left the university?
When I left the
you
university,
had already established.
I opened my office. Up to that time, my office was in my home.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have some accounts and kept busy. And then once I left school, my wife said, look, I married you for love, but not for lunch. So I had to get an office.
When did you become associate professor?
Sometimes in the late 50s.
Are there any memorable anecdotes perhaps you'd like to tell us about?
Well,
to do with Duquesne?
No, anecdotes.
With the Duquesne years.
I became chairman of the athletic department at Duquesne when it was in its heyday. It had great teams. As chairman, one evening I invited the entire team to my home for dinner, including the All-American, what's his first name, Green, it'll come to me in just a minute, Cy Hugo Green was an All-American, he was in my class, nicest boy you ever want to meet, not the greatest student. I recall specifically he came to my class and said, Mr. Raisman, I can't take the test on Friday because I'm going to New York to appear on the Perry Como show. I said, you go ahead. Then one day, I recall specifically, he said, I won't be able to take a test or something like that. I said, I'll tell you what you do. If you score 35 points tonight against Dayton, then you don't have to take the test. You went out there and scored 35 points.
Were you a good athlete yourself that you took an interest in sport?
I was not a good athlete. I was a fair athlete, but I loved it.
Did you always love sport as such?
Yeah.
Do you still play anything today?
Yes, I play tennis and all of it. I still play tennis.
Good
doubles
for,
on the
good for you. And people that you met through the university, were there any other people that you'd like to comment on?
Well, yes, all my colleagues were very fine. The deans were great. The professors that I worked with were still friendly with those who were still there. And I still go back to the 25-year dinner. Anybody who's been there 25 years is invited back by the president for the dinner. I go back and meet these people again and glad to see them. And I'm on committees, the CPA committees, in which they are also part of the committees. And we see them at social events or down at the theaters or something like that.
In your years at the university, did you ever receive any special awards you'd like to tell us about?
Well, I was given the award as a community leader at Duquesne, an outstanding teacher who was involved in community affairs. That was given to me. I have a plaque of some sort. I think it's here, I'm not sure. And also I was the first president of Beta Gamma Sigma, which is a national honorary business fraternity.
Did you start it?
Yes.
I was one of the
initiators of that program. We had a man come in from Penn State to install all of us, to give us our charter, and it still exists. It's an outstanding fraternity, an honorary fraternity all over the United States.
For business,
right.
So, in retrospect, looking back at your career as a CPA, were you pleased that you chose that and you've been happy with that?
Yes.
What made you actually go into it initially? You said you wanted to be a doctor.
Well,
his sons became the doctors.
That's right. What happened was that the opportunities were there after graduation. I might tell you that the person in charge of jobs at Pitt said, "Al, you know, trying to get you a job with a CPA firm, a national Big Eight, is impossible. They weren't taking Jewish boys." And the Jewish firms in town were sort of filled up. And so I went to work selling shoes at floor shine for making $50 a week. That's a lot of money, $50 a week back in 1939.
Right.
And then I got a call in December that a small Jewish firm, P.A. Love and Company, was looking for an accountant. I went for the interview. They offered me $12.50 a week, $50 a month, with a raise within 2 months if I made the deal. I came back and I complained to my dad about $50 versus $12.50. He said, "Look, you can always be a shoe salesman. You go ahead and you take this as a profession." He said, "And I'll make up the difference a little bit, so that you'll have a few bucks to go out of it," and so forth. So I went to work for PA Love, and then I switched to another firm, and then I went off to the service. When I came back, I went to school, started teaching school, and opened up my own little practice, and that's the way it's been ever since.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Tell us about your involvement in the Jewish community. Which temple do you belong to, and organizations you belong to?
As soon as I came back from my army service, we became members of Rode of Sholem Temple immediately. And we became active, and there were so many. That organization had as many as 400 young people back in those days. The religious school had 1,200 students. Had it go on 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. That's how many there were. I became active, my wife became active, and within a few years I became president of the junior congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Following that, I became active in the Brotherhood. Then I became president of the Brotherhood. On the Brotherhood level, then I started to go to national organizations. But meanwhile, I want to tell you that during this entire time I was involved with the United Jewish Federation. Even when I had this little small home in Swissvale, we had a parlor meeting and at a friend of mine's home. And we invited some of the businessmen there. We told one man one day, "We think you got to give $50 and he fainted. Businessman, he hadn't gone to the service. He's making a fortune in Swissvale. And we told him he got to give a $50 gift. He fainted, absolutely. But I became involved with that almost immediately, and continued with the Brotherhood on a national level, became involved with other organizations here. I eventually became president of the School for Advanced Jewish Studies, and received a very nice honor from them called Parnas HaKal.
In what year?
It's right on the certificate. 1978. again in 1982, the Brotherhood and Brother Scholem named a lectureship, a Jewish Chautauqua lectureship in my honor at Chatham College.
Wonderful.
It's still there, and that was done in 1982 because I have this plaque here. You can take a look at it.
Yes,
yes,
we will.
Perhaps you can give us copies of, if you have, or just the one.
It's a big plaque.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're very proud of that, I'm sure.
Where was the lecture held?
Chatham.
Oh.
Mm.
That's beautiful.
Then I moved on to president of the temple.
And that year?
That was 6, 7, 8. That would have been 1981 for a 3-year term. Mm-hmm. And I have a memento, a beautiful picture that gave me after I went out of office. Mm-hmm. And then I've been on the board, the National Board of the Brotherhood, for years. On the Executive Committee of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations. I'm active with many committees of the CPAs locally. I've lectured for the CPAs also on specific terms, specific subjects. I'm a lucky guy, that's all.
You certainly are. In the community, aside from Jewish affairs and the CPA, is there anything else that you're connected with?
Not much more.
Not much more time.
Good, I don't
think. What about your wife? Is she?
Yeah, she was president of the Ladies Auxiliary of Monitor Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She's always been at my side as far as religion is concerned.
Does she have a profession, or has she been
a
homemaker?
No, she's a housewife.
But just involved.
She works as a volunteer at the monitor.
Mm-hmm.
She's done that for years. And I'm very happy with that.
Was she president, you said, of the Ladies Hospital?
Yes, she was. She's still on their executive board. Mm-hmm. And she was also president of the Sisterhood of Brother Scholem.
Mm-hmm.
She was a national member of the board of the national, on the board of the National Sisterhood for a few years, but just too much for both of us to be on that situation, flying back and forth and so forth.
Have you traveled
a great deal?
Excuse
me, you mustn't leave out her activity on the board of Jewish Family and Children's
That's
Service,
right.
Since I'm a former
That's right. Yeah, she's been on that for a long time.
Yes.
She loves that. She's also on the Jewish Community Relations Council.
Mm-hmm.
Been on that for some time.
Mm-hmm.
My kids always say, "Hey, how come your picture isn't in the Chronicle this week?"
Right.
So through your work, have you traveled a great deal? To Israel?
To where?
To Israel,
oh, yes,
for example.
Israel 4 times.
Would you comment on any people that you've met who've made a great impact on you?
Well, the first time in 1960, when the entrance to Jordan, you know, was when the soldiers of Jordan were on the roofs next to the King David Hotel. We could only go so far. That was an interesting visit. After that, we made visits when things were open, and we traveled a great deal. And our last visit was to the World Jewish Congress, World Zionist Organization, WZO. We were delegates from ARTSA, the American Zionist Association of Reformed Zionists of America, ARTSA. There we had a very marvelous 10 days But the Intifada started that week. But we were not even aware of it. The Jerusalem Post had little or no information about it, and we didn't even know anything was going on. We went through the Mir Shirim, we went down to Eilat, we flew here, we flew if like nothing. We came back and we see all this going on.
When was that, did you say?
That was 1988.
Wow.
December of 88, when the Intifada started.
How do you feel about today in Israel?
We feel that they are sitting back and taking this because of their association with the United States. They don't want to do anything to break that alliance. We cannot understand how Hussein is willing to have his people destroyed because of his ego. We are very sorry to see in case these were civilians, but knowing bombing, knowing war, that's one of the problems. That's one of the chances you take, one of the risks you take. And it's unfortunate if there were children there or young people there, they shouldn't have been there. That's all. Knowing how devious he is, he could do anything.
How do you view all your accomplishments and successes?
Mine? I just feel like fortunate young man, and so blessed with the family and with friends and the opportunity to do things. If you were to look at my, everybody says that nobody gives enough, that's true, but if you were to look at my tax return and see how much I give during the year, I mean, and I take a look at some of my clients when they give me their list of contributions, and I say to myself, what a joke.
And if you had to comment on your most significant accomplishment, what would that be?
Well, the family, I would say, would be the opportunity to have two wonderful sons and daughter-in-laws and four marvelous grandchildren, and the opportunity to have a good reputation in the city. That's all I can tell you.
And in retrospect, is there anything you would have done differently? Or wished you could have changed?
No, I wish I'd have made some better investments. But I have no complaint, financially or socially or otherwise.
Also, looking back and coming forward, how do you see Pittsburgh today?
Well, I think Pittsburgh is fortunate in that it went through its real depression 10 years ago. And now, because of its involvement in medicine and in academics, it is not affected so much by the lack of jobs and the dramatic changes that are happening in other cities. I think that we'll manage until the war is over to get along, and then I think we should see some improvement. But right now, we don't hear as much about a depressive situation here as we do in many other cities. Sales of homes are reasonable, jobs are fair, and there are influxes of doctors and academicians and so forth in the area, because we don't have any heavy industry anymore. It's gone.
So you see it as a very positive
thing? Oh, yes, I would say we're lucky right now.
And as you watched it grow socially, culturally, and so on, you feel...
Oh, yes, my only regret is that we don't have more people coming in and that our population continues to fall. And that someday I think that it'll be necessary for Pittsburgh to gather in all these small areas in Allegheny County and have one metropolitan area with one government so that we save a lot of money with these different organizations and be in a position to carry on in a larger context and split up as we are today. Police chief here, police chief there, like this we have all under one. But nobody will give up their turf.
Do you think we need better PR work?
I think they will.
You think so? And just a final comment on the Jews of Pittsburgh, the Jewish life in Pittsburgh. How would you see it today as opposed to years ago?
Well, I think that we need to have more input by younger people. I'm seeing it on the boards of the various organizations. I see new fresh blood. I see young people coming and taking their position, because we older people, you know, have to give up. And that's one thing that I have never failed to do. When I feel that I've done what I could, then I turn around and say, let somebody else take over. I minimize my involvement as much as possible so that I can let other people come in. I did want to comment something that maybe I forgot. That had to do work with the scholarship committee of the EJF. I've been on that for years. And we're the ones that, through the Federation and through the JF and CS, give away the monies and they will lend the monies and so forth. I've been active on that committee through any number of great chair people. But my involvement has been strictly on a financial basis, looking at what people have and what they're willing to do for their children, and then commenting with regard to that.
That's to the request, you mean?
Yes.
You evaluate the request?
That's right, we evaluate the request. And I'm very pleased that we give away thousands of dollars and lend thousands of dollars. And these people are very, very appreciative. And I also usually give one Sunday in which we give the checks out to the youngsters and their parents. And it's always gratifying to see what they have to say. And then we tell them, remember, this is part of UJF, and someday when you're out, you're in that field, don't forget us. And I guess that's the way it is.
And do many of them contact you years later? And
yes, they do. They contact us. They come and become part of the telethon. They do a lot of other things. Things come back to you as you talk.
Right,
you may use it or not.
Right.
I recall our trip when we went to Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. And from there, we went to Krakow, and we visited an old shul in an old cemetery, and there was one woman who spoke English. Davidovitz was her name, I'm almost sure. And we were getting on the bus leaving, and she spoke a little English, but mostly Yiddish, and I was one of the few that understood Yiddish. And as we got on the bus, you know, we had all given some of those men in the shul, which had incidentally become a horse stable for the Germans before they cleaned it up. And she repeated to us and went on to Vergessensnicht. Don't forget us. You know, they're all over 60 years old. They're all on pension. And she said, don't forget us. We're still here. But now there are so few in Poland anyway. And they're all old. And the man we met at the Polish cemetery in Warsaw, I said, who's going to succeed you? He said, nobody. My own son left. He said, when I die, he said, I don't think anybody will take care of the cemetery anymore.
Is there any other information you think you'd like to give us that we haven't touched on?
I think you have everything. What I want to know is how you chose me.
Somebody recommended you, said you had a wonderful background material.
Yes.
And they're right. Beautiful background material. And I want to say, you know, we're going to go over this together, the two of us. There may be other questions that come up that, you know, we didn't think of. If we do, would you mind if we called you again? Very good.
Well, it was